Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
There was no other example of this. Ratuki was that, you know, it was the beginning of it.
I didn't know what it meant really at that time. And so it was a jump into the unknown, a leap of faith.
It's not just a little river, it's becoming a waterfall.
Kia ora, I'm Liz Garten, and this episode of Eyewitness is about a little primary school at the foothills of the Uruwera Ranges in the Bay of Plenty. It's called Te Wharekura o Ruatuki. It was established in 1896, but its real claim to fame would come nearly a century later, when that little school in the heart of Tūhoe became an anchor for the Māori language, one that caught deep and held strong. Te reo Māori had gone from being spoken everywhere, even by many Pākehā settlers, to being drowned out by English. The language was becoming confined to Kuroa, the older generations, and small rural pockets. By the 1970s, the first generation of Māori born after the urban migration began arriving at university. Their parents and grandparents had come to the city and abandoned their language, and now this generation was feeling the loss. They became the catalyst for change, and we began to see a concerted push to have more te reo everywhere, but especially in schools. In Ruatuki, the lobbying began to have the tamariki taught in their language.
There were many, many huis, and there were many, many journeys to Wellington.
This is Turuhira Hare on RNZ's Checkpoint program in 2018. She's a teacher at the school, but describes her role during the changeover as mother help, come secretary, come everything.
Well, I was the one taking all the briefcases and all the papers, and while Timothy and Hirini Melbourne and Wharehuia and them did all the fighting, the bargaining with the ministers, and I would be sitting there listening to all our elders fight for the kura. Because it didn't just take one hui, it took a whole year.
Partly that was because some in Tūhoe just weren't sure about it.
There were also opposition from our own people. They didn't want bilingualism. They wanted mainstream, so they took all their children out into the mainstream schools in Whakatane and Taneatua. So that happened as well. And a lot of our families, like back then in the 1970s, 80s, 90s, you know, there were full buses bringing children into Ruatuki from Whakatane and from Ngātia or other tribal areas, but there were also full buses leaving the valley to go take them out into the Pākehā schools.
But mainly, Tūhoe wanted the school, and they fought to get it. Dr. Richard Benton worked for the New Zealand Council of Educational Research for 25 years. His work in the 70s showed just how perilously close the Māori language was to disappearing. And it was in 1973 that he wrote a booklet raising the idea of bilingual schooling. But back then, the Department of Education would only cop to, yeah, OK, we'll consider it, but without commitment. Benton says the breakthrough came much later when the outgoing Education Minister, Les Gandar, asked John Rangiho the one thing he could do for Māori. Rangiho asked for a bilingual school at Ruatuki, and the decree went out. The department then had to comply. The school got the go-ahead, and a new principal was brought in, Tawhiri Mātia Williams.
I was jumping into the unknown. What the heck was bilingual education? What's Māori medium education? Even the departments didn't know what it meant really at that time. And in many ways, they sort of left there and said, well, do your job and let's see what happens. Well, we'll have a saying in Māori, mā te mahi rāno ka mōhio. By doing the job, you will learn to do the job as you do it.
Williams was pretty quickly put to the test.
So these people came to see Khan at the school. One was a fellow called Tuhitare Nohitsima, and he was a gigantic man. He must have been about 24, 25 stone. That's how we weighed people in those days. A massive man. And another woman called Tikina, but her name and was doing it as Jai. And Jai was a shortened form of Gigantor. So these two massive people came to see Kai and I, didn't know them, and said, hey, you two have got to come to the marae Papakāinga on Wednesday afternoon, where the people will welcome you. Well, I was scared. I was scared to hell.
The marae was packed.
And I knew that this was going to be my first challenge. And to tell you the truth here, I wasn't a competent speaker. I was barely a speaker of Māori, let alone Tūhoe Māori. But I had always been of the determination I needed to speak my language.
And Williams had a not-so-secret weapon, his wife, Kaa.
I always knew that the people to whom my wife belonged, which was the Tūhoe people, was the place for me to go.
Kaa is from Ruatahuna. She got a job teaching at the school too.
It was a bit better because they knew me and they knew who I was, where I had come from, and they were quite good with me, and they had to be good with him as well.
You came as a double team actually.
Yes, there was tension at the beginning because...
For a number of years ago.
Yeah, and the teachers thought, you know...
Who's this guy coming in from outside?
Yeah.
Who is he? He's not a Tūhoe?
Yeah.
He can't even speak Māori very well.
Yeah, no. Just
and I had the arrogance to think that I could start the first Māori medium school in New Zealand, and I wasn't a fluent speaker of Māori myself.
No.
But I was a good teacher.
Yes.
But back to that May evening in 1978, in a room full of Tūhoe people.
There are two old men who stood and spoke, and they're both passed now. And one of them said to me, this is the essence of what he was saying, we are an introspective people. We are inward-looking people, and we keep within our boundaries. We keep within our hills, we keep within our forests, we keep in our valleys, we keep within our rivers and our streams and so on. But now, with this school being appointed as the pioneering school for bilingual Māori medium education in New Zealand, and you being appointed as the principal of the school, he said, Tūhoe now is no longer able to stay in the midst of Hinepū Kōurangi. It can't stay to itself isolated as it wants to be in its hills and its valleys. Tūhoe is now being put in front of all the tribes of New Zealand. He said, even though there are people going to the moon, yeah, we don't worry about that. And he said, be careful, you have the mana, the Māori, the tapu of Tūhoe in your hands. Look after it. How do you respond to that? I didn't know what to say. I honestly didn't know what to say. But that's one of the things that I will never, ever forget.
And that first test, it wasn't his last. Williams felt constantly tested.
You have to be strong to survive. And it's a test of you as a person. It's a test of you and your belief in yourself as a person and your own identity too, for that matter. And your own strength, your own tenacity, your knowledge of what you want to do and where you're going, all of these things are constantly tested all the time. All the time. And so if you're up to it, you'll stand. If you're not up to it, you'll fall over.
And you were there for how long?
19 years.
You did pretty well then.
I didn't do too bad then. And I am very forever grateful for spending those 19 years with those Tūhoe people.
Back in 1978, Williams had a job to do and he got on with it. Even though he didn't always get the support he should have, like when he was invited along to the Whakatāne Principals Association monthly meeting to talk about his kaupapa.
They were quite negative about it. And I felt that in the comments about that ineptitude. I felt like as though Chu Hoy was being accused of setting up terrorists within the valley to be against the system and against the people. Mm. This was the action of the principals. And because of that strong negative reaction, it didn't come out actually in words, but in feelings, you can feel these things, I never ever went back to one of the meetings again. Mm. For the next 18 years, I never returned.
For the students, the change in their school was barely noticeable.
It was just another day at school for them, like it was for all of us. It wasn't sort of like the curtain had been opened and our big, bright new world is out there. No, it was just school as usual.
Although in some ways they were starting from scratch.
There were no books written in Māori. So what I did was take them down to the stream that was down there and get them to collect watercress. And so we made up a book about going to collect watercress, something simple and something that they knew about. If we were doing maths, we'd go out and catch grasshoppers. There's maths in there and there's science in there and nature study in there. And we'd catch spiders and things like that. I didn't, but they did.
Tawhiri Mātia describes it as learning drawn from the community.
The trees, the birds, the forest and all those sorts of things. And my wife used to take me down to the creek and they were swimming with no clothes on and things like that. You think you wouldn't do that? We did it in those days.
Kaa also helped get the school's sports team into the local leagues.
We'd take them in buses and I couldn't drive that well. But I had to get a licence or whatever it is, so they gave me little buses.
Tawhiri Mātia says the school was something of an experiment and people came from all around the country and all over the world to see what they were up to.
I don't think the kids appreciated it, understood what was happening to them until they grew up to be adults and suddenly they looked back and said, my God.
He's spot on. Hans Te Akiwai is principal of Te Wharekura o Ruatoki now. He was a 7-year-old student there when it officially became bilingual.
It wasn't anything new because we had grown up in early childhood before kohana and all the instruction was in the reo. We were surrounded by reo. So really, school was just school. And when I sit down and look at the stuff we did, you know, our curriculum was based on, it was localised curriculum. We would go down just below our school here near one of our local marae and we would go eelin. We'd be taken to local sites and told the history. We would have a lot of involvement from our community and I think that was one of the biggest things when I look back on it now is that our whole community was involved in the scope of it. So it wasn't just the school that was carrying it. So we had our teachers who were in our classrooms and we were fortunate at the time that we had a large number of kaumātua who still had te reo. We still do now, but we didn't realise what we had in terms of resources, human resources that were available to us.
Te Akiwai can see the benefit a bilingual education had for him and his peers.
What it's done for us is it's made us look more broad at the world around us. It allows us in terms of making decisions to look at things not from one perspective but from two perspectives as we walk in both worlds. And I think for us, the world is a richer place in terms of we can understand, we can communicate better in both spaces.
And he's passionate about wharekura and their growth across the country.
There's a saying, me tiro whakamuri ki ana whakamua. We look into the past and we take some of the lessons from the past to help us as we move forward into the future.
Ruatoki was the first, but over the next several years, more schools became bilingual. Although, in Ruatoki's case, bilingual might have been a bit of a misnomer. Here's Tawhiri Mātia again.
We started school in May, and we were teaching English Māori. I said, Kaa, stop it. Teach Māori for one term completely, and don't go to be bilingual. So when we finished the term, I said, now what? Well, what do you want? She says, I ain't going back to teaching bilingual. I'm teaching total immersion Māori. So we were bilingual, but we're teaching total immersion Māori. That was an important stepping stone for Kaa and I into our Māori. and how to have a feel and appreciation of the kind of Māori language you teach. It's not just a linguistic skill, it is a human skill.
Te Wharekura o Ruatoki goes all the way up to year 13 now. It's got a roll of more than 200 students. And as of July this year, there were nearly 300 schools around the country with students enrolled in Māori medium education, which really just means they're learning in te reo Māori more than half the time. Ruatoki's transformation into a bilingual school was the beginning of a huge movement to rejuvenate a language.
Māori children, they're actually growing up being proud. Proud that they are Māori. And the language is the one that gives them the pride.
Tawhiri Bhatia left me with a little language lesson of my own.
And I tell these people, ko te rā manu, ka kai te miro te gahine. Hurihia te rā manu, te noho pē rā tonu. Oh, sorry, dear. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I don't. But I know you're very good at explaining it as you go along, so I'm very good.
That bird who has as its foundations the knowledge of the forest, the trees and its food, that bird can go to be knowledgeable of the world. Right? Don't leave his knowledge out and ignore it and just go to the knowledge of the world. Bring it with him. That's his foundation. That's who he is. That's his identity.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Eyewitness, produced by me, Liz Garten, and engineered by Rangi Pauk. The waiata you heard through this episode is from Ngā Taonga Sound and Vision. It's a recording of Te Wharekura o Ruatoki students from the early 80s, and I think you could probably hear Carr Williams in there as well. My heartfelt thanks to both Tawhiri and Carr, who took time out of their very busy day to speak with me, to Hans Te Akiwai, who pointed me in the right direction and tried to round up some relatives for me, and especially to Rawinia Higgins and David Green for giving me the historical context for the story. Eyewitness and all RNZ's podcasts are available through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts and iHeartRadio, or wherever you find your podcasts. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and rate us while you're there. Ka kite anō.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.